Welcome to CFRI Cystic Fibrosis Community Voices, a video podcast series created by and for the cystic fibrosis community.
My name is Melissa. I am 33 years old and I have cystic fibrosis. I wasn't diagnosed until I was a freshman in high school. I was 14. I grew up with all of the respiratory symptoms, but was pancreas deficient. And I think that allowed me to kind of fly under the radar and be diagnosed with asthma and allergies. We live in a small town, and I think a little bit of doctors not having a whole lot of experience with CF. I know that the pancreas insufficiency can oftentimes be like the telltale sign that sends people to get tested. I have an older brother. He also has cystic fibrosis. We were diagnosed a month apart, and his symptoms are vastly different than mine, but he got sick at a 49er game, and he passed out. And so the doctors at the game told my dad to take him to the ER when he got home and get him checked out. And they did a chest x-ray, and the scarring on the chest x-ray was the CF scarring. So my brother got sent up to Stanford, Lucile Packard's at Stanford, and did the sweat test and was diagnosed with CF. And a month later, I went up and was diagnosed. My mom says when she was there with my brother and she was hearing all of the list of symptoms with coughing and all of that stuff, she was like, this is definitely what Melissa has. So we kind of came in late to the game. We weren't a part of the CF camps or anything like that. Cross-contamination guidelines had just come into effect, so when we went to clinic, we didn't see any other patients, but it was before social media and the internet came in, so it was, we didn't know anybody else or any other families with the disease. We only knew each other. So I think that my brother and I handled it well and probably like didn't understand the severity of the disease when we were diagnosed, so weren't as scared about it because we were wrapped up in being 14 and 15 years old. And I kind of felt like, well, if I have to do this vest, then I'm still gonna like go to the dance and like do the important stuff, you know. So for me, like, I didn't really feel the effects of the disease on my body until I was a freshman in college. You know, we started doing all of the treatments freshman year of high school, but we remained pretty active and healthy. I had my first hospitalization when I was a senior in high school, and we both had to do sinus surgery too right after we got diagnosed, so that sucked, but besides that, through high school, we were able to manage the disease and get sort of used to doing the treatments, but I don't really think the severity or that it was going to be a lifelong thing really set in until college, as I started noticing the effects on my body. I wouldn't say I was a superstar athlete, but I played field hockey. My brother played roller hockey. You know, I think my parents didn't prevent us from continuing to stay active once we were diagnosed. I think that obviously once I went to college, I wasn't playing a sport. And I wasn't doing PE. I wasn't as active. I tried to remain as active as I could, but I think at that point there was not very much guidance in what exercise could do and how much it could help you. Once I graduated, I kind of went through some ebbs and flows of exercising. I started lifting weights a little bit with my dad, mostly walking on the treadmill. And that would kind of come and go with hospitalizations. Hospitalizations and IVs would kind of like knock you back all the way down. So I tried to remain active. As I got older and my lung function got lower, it became harder. But from after graduating college up until my transplant, I lived at 40%. And when I was about 23 or 24, I really was in like a bad cycle with my disease. I was getting hospitalized 3 or 4 times a year. As soon as I would get better, I would get sick again. We'd start the whole process of IVs and everything over and over. I ended up getting Milo, my therapy dog, who was A, to help my mental health, and B, to get me out of the house and to have to walk him. And that's kind of where my exercise journey started for me, was just walking with him. I lived in San Francisco, and we would explore Golden Gate Park together, and he could walk off leash. I was in nature, so I could cough giant loogies and not have people stare at me. And I really realized how much airway clearance it was providing for me. And about at the same time was when I went to my very first Malleola Foundation Surf Day in Santa Cruz. And the Malleola Foundation had started because these two brothers, James and Charlie Dunlop, had found out about the research showing that the salt water was so beneficial for people with cystic fibrosis. They were lifelong surfers. They wanted to get some CF kids in the water with surfers. And this very small idea blossomed into this huge foundation. And I had always wanted to try surfing growing up in Monterey. I had always been around surfing, but never really been in the ocean. As a kid, not knowing I had CF, I would get enrolled in swim lessons and constantly get sick and never get to finish them. So I was not a confident swimmer, and I did not know if I'd be very good at it. But I actually think my dad might have gotten a CFRI email about the surf day. And I was worried that I would miss out on my experience. So I had just gotten out of the hospital. My PICC line was just pulled like a few days before. And I was like, well, I have to go and I have to try, because this might be my only chance. So I went, and I had an incredible time. I had a great coach. I met the Malleola guys. My lungs felt very clear. It was not as scary as I thought. Through the course of a 2.5-year span, I didn't get hospitalized once, and I continued to get stronger and push myself. And I think, like, I was still operating at 40% lung function, and my lung function hadn't changed, but the reality of, like, making your body as strong as you can be to compensate for your lungs maybe not being as strong as they can be was just getting more and more solidified. So for me, like, surfing was this like key to the puzzle in my health that like helps sort of click like everything in my life. One night my CO2 was rising and rising, and I became really incoherent. And this is only like stories from Joey and my mom, but when I would desat, I had 15 liters in my nose, and they would put a 15-liter mask on my face. And so they decided to trach me after 10 days because they thought it would be, A, more comfortable for me and less damaging to my vocal cords, and be way better for airway clearance. And they were doing airway clearance every 2 hours. It would take almost an hour to do, might get an hour break. And at that point, like, my lungs were so shot that doing airway clearance kind of felt like I was drowning every time. And I was also, they had this special bed brought in that they were using for their ECMO patients in order to exercise. They had told us they wanted me to do PT 3 times a day, but PT obviously couldn't come to my room 3 times a day, so my dad and Joey started doing PT with me. That was kind of really my dad's, the moment my dad kind of like settled in and found his like comfortable place in the ICU of what he knew and was good at, and kind of our time that we could spend together. And we would do curls and punches, and we had little tiny, you know, 1 or 2 pound weights. And you know, for me, I had a lot of anxiety then, and at least moving my body as much as I could, even though I was stuck in this bed, not really allowed to move much, made me feel better. And I knew how to exercise. Like, for me, like, I knew how to do that. And so it was easy compared to a lot of the stuff. So this bed, they would strap you in, and they bring you up a certain amount of degrees, and then you can load bear, so you can do toe raises or small kicks or things like that. Everyone thought it was very exciting. I hated it. I thought it was a new thing, so not all the nurses knew how to use it, which made me very nervous. The reps would come and stand at the glass doors and watch. But we did it. They told us to do PT 3 times a day, and atrophy was one of the biggest challenges I personally felt with ECMO. And since it was so new, there wasn't a huge program developed to help with the recovery after being on ECMO. And I'm very certain that if I wouldn't have been as strong as I was from surfing and triathlons and weightlifting, that like I wouldn't have survived, because I withered away into nothing. And if I wouldn't have had that big buffer, I don't know what else there was to lose. So we just... we worked the days in the ICU before the transplant. There was not enough minutes in the day to do all of the treatments, all of the tests, to sleep, to do everything. And I was listed on October 13th. I was put on ECMO October 11th. And I was listed October 13th, and I waited 23 days, and I was I was 91 out of 100 on the lung allocation score list, which is pretty high. And we waited 23 days for lungs, and they came, and it was right after Halloween. And it's not something, it's just something that's brought up, is that organs come on weekends and holidays. And Halloween was on a rainy Saturday. And in my mind, I was like, I just have to make it to Halloween. And Halloween came and went, and no lungs came. And it was the day, next day, November 1st, and I told Joey I just didn't know how long I could do it. And, like, a couple hours later, a fellow came into my room and told me they had organs for me. So I was definitely at the end of my, I didn't have much left in me to hold on to. So he came in, and at first I thought it was just a regular fellow coming to bug me on a Sunday night, and I was like, we're just trying to nap. And he said, Melissa, I'm Dr. Rousseau, and we have organs for you. And I just wrote, holy shit, on my clipboard and circled it. I was not really worried about what would happen, because there was only, this was the only choice and the only answer. And I woke up the next day and I was back in my room and awake sooner than anybody expected. And I saw some of my two very dear friends from like middle school looking at me through the glass. And I woke up and I said, here, and they were like, oh my god, she's awake. And I was like, come in here, because nobody was in my room, and because everyone was sleeping still. And so they gowned up and came in and found me my clipboard, and they did have to take me in 12 hours later because I had blood clots on my lungs. So they had to go in, reopen me, take those blood clots out, seal me up. But I don't remember that. I actually, this is like one of my only ICU times where I was kind of confused. My dad and Joey were in there, and my dad was saying, you know, like, you had blood clots, I have to take, you know, take them back out. And I said, okay, when's that going to happen? And he was like, oh, no, 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 it already happened. Like, you're done. Like, all your surgeries are done. So for me, we joke that like nothing panned out. Nothing about me has been normal. The course of my CF hasn't been normal. I'm 33 years old and I just started taking enzymes. You know, like my transplant wasn't normal. The way I got sick wasn't normal, and the way I healed hasn't been the normal course either. And I think with transplant, like, there's no standard. People and the complications vary so much due to how complicated your body is, and all the systems are connected, and all the medications can affect different things, that there's no normal course for anybody. And expecting your course of transplant to be like anyone else's is, I think, an unrealistic expectation. And, you know, I think it's something that everybody struggles with. They worry, you have fear about having to do it again. And managing taking care of yourself and balancing that with wanting to make the most out of the second chance you've been given, and where the best way to spend your time and how to spend your time doing it. So it's, I think the general perception is, I don't know if this is from CFers, but from the general population, people think the surgery and the transplant is the hard part. And that is the first challenge out of many that are gonna occur. Unfortunately, I am on oxygen post-transplant. I actually wasn't on oxygen leading up to my transplant, so it's a new thing for me. And once I had a couple of lung injuries and had to go on the oxygen a second time, we didn't know how long it would be staying. At this point, it seems like it's going to be permanent. And last fall, I sat myself down and decided I wasn't going to wait until I was off oxygen to do the things I loved. Luckily, Joey is an excellent surfer and instructor and has gone with that and helped me get out into the ocean with the oxygen tank. It has taken a lot of trial and error and a lot of supports from some great surf companies. And we are still troubleshooting the oxygen carrying backpack, but we have been able to go surfing about once a month for the last couple of months and are getting better at riding waves together, tandem on the same board. And we're just trying to keep our lives as normal as possible despite the crazy circumstances that transplant throws in there. And if that means bringing an oxygen tank on the surfboard with us, that's what we're gonna do. And we're gonna try to keep surfing as long as I can. As long as my body is able and I'm able to safely do it, we're gonna keep riding baby waves. And you know, if there's the ability to get a tinier oxygen tank and get out on my own surfboard, I hope to do that too. He's an incredible partner. He is the driving force behind getting me into the water, even when I'm terrified and scared. And he has tricked me into getting the water the first time with the tank and continued to encourage me and troubleshoot. And it still is the place that makes me feel free. And in the transplant world of complications and oxygen and new things to worry about, when we go surfing in Santa Cruz and eat tacos and hang out with our dogs, it's makes me feel like the life I had before I got sick. And that's what I've been. It's the final piece to my puzzle of what I felt like I lost through the surgery and the recovery. So it's not the way I was surfing before, but it's surfing nonetheless, and people have been so supportive, and we're hoping to continue to do it just because we love it and it makes us happy and it makes us feel like us. And that's what is our driving force for PT and staying healthy, is so that we can keep going into the ocean.